ground, air, and supplies. Infantry.
Where this place called Matamoros is. And how soon
all handicapped, kicked around in peace time like a football, did its job without brag or bluster, and did it well. But the boys who died at Matamoros and First Bull Run died only too often, as Light Horse Harry Lee said they shouldn't die, uninformed and untrained. They died at Chickamauga in 98 of fever. They died on San Juan Hill. They went to France in 17 and 18. 2 million of them, first and last. We know what they did there. The German general staff said we couldn't put an army in the field. We put 2 million men. They broke the enemy's front and went to the Rhine. Then we demobilized. Gladly. Wasn't the world at peace? Well, you know what happened. But this time, we did make some plans. For the first time in history, we raised a draft army before war fell on us. Raised it fair and square, by lot and law. Raised it out of just the same sort of Americans who fought at Clinton and Cerro Gordo, Chancellorsville and Kensington. And we've got it now. And it's worth it. Forget the past for a moment. Forget even the heroic names of the past. This is war. And this is now. Not yesterday. Not Gettysburg or the Marne, the Alamo or Chateau Thierry. But now. That's a map. A map of the world. The whole round globe of Earth. It's in the office of the Chief of Staff of Washington, General George C. Marshall. He is the 10th man in all our history to wear the 4 silver stars of a full general. He is the first American general who ever had to plan a grand strategy that took in all the world. The quiet room, the central brain cell of the army. The men who go in and out of it wear uniforms. The man who sits at the big desk wears a uniform. Otherwise, it's rather like any executive office. There's no spur jingling or table pounding. The papers flow in and out, and the calls flow in and out, night and day, from the 3 great branches of the army: ground, air, and supply. Red coats? Brass hats? I thought you'd ask about that. We're a funny people that way when it comes to our army. We wouldn't hire a lawyer who'd never been to law school. We wouldn't employ a surgeon who's never done an appendectomy. But if a man has been schooled and trained all his life in the theory and practice of war, why, he's a red tape brass hat and everybody's free to criticize. And yet, war is also a profession. That's the actor. I wonder just who are the red tape brass hats. MacArthur, the West Point graduate, sat in this room once. Or the country club strategist who tells us all how to win the war over cocktails. Marshall, the VMI graduate. Or the congressman from South Overcote who never fired a gun. Yes, I wonder sometimes. We pay General Marshall $8,000 a year. That's not very big money, is it? And the same to MacArthur for holding off 200,000 Japs on Luzon. But they aren't kicking about the pay. They're satisfied. And what do they do to earn their pay? Where do the plans get executed? What sort of news comes into the quiet room? Let's listen a minute. Short wave.
Hello. Hello, Brad. This is Truman. Yeah, I'm talking from Ulster. We just landed. Well, I guess I was the first guy ashore, so the old man said I could board there. Oh, well, old fine, and the folks are swell here. Yeah, I just got my clean socks on. Yeah, remember me to Brett, the boy.
That was a private in the United States Army talking from Northern Ireland. And here.
Yes, Susie. I hope this finds you okay, just as it leaves me. It's cold around here, but a guy who's used to Minnesota transcript. Pretty scenery, too. So there's farm shipments. Well, we've got a job to do, and I guess we mean to do it. All the same, Susie, I'd kind of like to hear from you. Your last letter was swell, but I ain't had one since. You might write a guy once in a while.
That was a corporal attached to our task force in Iceland. Now,
enemy activity during the past 24 hours were negligible. It is believed that the Japanese plans for the renewal of the offensive
Yukon, Batavia, Alaska, the Caribbean, halfway around the world. American troops are marching. American planes are flying. But why? Why? We're defending ourselves, aren't we? We built an army for defense, didn't we? So why do we have to fight all over the map? Listen, here's your answer. You hear that? That's the B-19. The biggest bomber yet built in the USA. So big that when a pilot wants to rev up a motor, he doesn't do it himself. He phones someone else to do it. So big she can carry 18 tons of bombs from New York to Athens and back, 7,000 miles under her own power. So big that she just got finished and already outmoded.
Outmoded?
Yes. But we learned a lot from making her. And on the drawing board now are airplane motors that develop even more thousands of horsepower. They'll be made, and they'll fly the planes and keep them flying. How far? Maybe halfway around the world. The world has shrunk like a squeezed orange. Old tools of war are obsolete.
Obsolete.
You can bomb Detroit from Brest. You can bomb Pearl Harbor from the waist to the Pacific. You can bomb Philadelphia from Iceland. And what stops the bombers? You have to have bases to stop them. You have to have hangars and ground crews and landing fields where your own planes can take off. You have to have guns and men to protect those bases.
Last night, I was over Berlin. Tonight, I'm here in Boston. It's an odd sensation, rather. But it happened. I caught the ferry plane.
That British pilot. You've read about him in the papers. Last night, Berlin. Tonight, Boston. And that's just the air. Just one huge phase of modern war. What about the ground? That was a single German tank unit in the Battle of France. In the last war, an advance of 63 miles usually meant weeks of fighting, the lives of thousands of men. But this is mechanized war, modern war, war of rupture, war that flies through the air at 400 miles an hour, war that spills and runs like quicksilver on lands and homes that only yesterday were peaceful and miles away from the guns. War fought around the curve of earth, quick-hitting, hard-striking, sudden, deadly. Call the roll. Have we got the tools to fight it? What tools have we got? What machines? Well, here's one of them. Mechanical range computer. What the boys call a jukebox in anti-aircraft. Kind of a brainy old buzzard. Hooks up with the range finder and the sound loudspeaker and the searchlight. Figures out the speed and altitude and range of enemy planes and then sets the gun so your shells burst on the target. That's all by its little self once it's in those wheels.
And it doesn't make mistakes. When you start coming over, Mr. Hitler, just remember the jukebox boys.
Modern war. War of machines and skills. Of dials and calibrations and micrometers. War we're able to fight because we know about them. Because when we want, we can make the best machines in the world. You've heard about our bomb sites. Well,
that it?
Yep, that's the baby, and she's everything they say.
Looks good.
Looks good. Listen, soldier, with that little hippa-dippy, you can drop a bomb in a pickle barrel once you've got the know-how. That's how Kelly and his bombardier sank the Haruna. And they weren't shooting wild, they knew how. Now, just take a...
What's that?
155-millimeter gun, sir. Worth $50,000. Weight 30,000 pounds. Fires a 95-pound shell nearly 15 miles. But move it. Now, you can haul it around by bucket sacks. Camouflage. You can use it right behind your front line. We call this one Kate Smith. He's a honey. We're going to need a lot of...
Hear that? You folks in the shop? How many Kate Smiths are coming off the production line? How many can you make?
50 caliber machines on air coupe. Automatic, used by motorized infantry. Terrific hitting posse.
But how many?
How many?
The triangular division needs plenty of machine guns. And every production day counts in this kind of war. And we could show you the light tanks and the mediums, the range finders and the fuse timers and all the tools of modern war. We could show you the Jeep. Come in, Jeep. How fast can you travel, Jeep?
60 miles an hour on good roads would have been a fair and a bad one. My mother was a tin lady and my father was a jack rabbit. I'll cart more men and their stuff than I'll probably see dozen quarters. I'm a fat and
The man at the front is out of luck. The people we're going to talk to now don't always get their names in the papers. But if they weren't on the job, we wouldn't have an army. What's your job, soldier?
Me? I cook for the 4th Battery. Boy, can those buzzards eat.
Must be a pretty soft job, just cooking for a gang of soldiers.
There's you. They just listen to them howl when a scout don't suit them. Not that I blame them. They fool me a cut to make a soldier, and that's my job.
Well, anyhow, it sounds like a nice, easy detail.
Yes, there's you. Ever up in the Argonne?
No.
Well, I was. Nice, quiet place to cook for batteries, the Argonne. Just as nice and quiet and safe as a four-alarm fire. I drew three much tests of it. It wasn't because I got wounded opening tin cans.
Thanks, soldier. And, by the way, I've got a message for you.
Yeah?
The sergeant said to be sure to ask you how you were fixed for lemon extract.
Lemon extract? By the flesh, by the son of... Lemon extract! Say, you get out of my system before I take this...
I wonder what made him so sore. Didn't mean to do it. You make a battery so sore and you're in for trouble. Oh, here's somebody with a hat for it I don't recognize. Maroon and white. Excuse me, soldier. Could you tell me just why you've got a different hat cord than these other men?
Medical cord, sir.
Oh, that is medical cord.
Yes, sir. I'm a pill roller. Stretcher bearer in action. This is my field kit.
You seem to be pretty well supplied.
Have to be, sir. Casualties have to be prepared.
And tell me, do you go out under fire?
Wouldn't do much good if I didn't, sir. The faster you can get the wounded out, the better chance they've got.
Thank you. And you?
First Sergeant, Signal Corps. Used to be a telephone line.
That's my job. I thought nowadays it was all radio.
Oh, we got good radio. Got the walkie-talkie. That's a two-way radio off that one man can carry on his back. Used for liaison communication. But we still need telephones and installation. Still need men to carry the lines to the front and repair them. Keep them working no matter if all hell's breaking. This kind of army needs both wireless and wire. And men who can work them both.
I can see that. And you?
I'm a quartermaster sergeant. Sure, we count blankets, we count shoes, we hand out the rations. Well, that's all they'll tell you we do. But if the grub doesn't get to the railhead, and if it doesn't get from there to the crooks, the guy up front's gonna go pretty hungry. And if his shoes don't fit and he goes lame, he's a soldier out of action.
Thanks. That's just a few of the skills and services that go to the making of an army. And right where the shooting starts... Oh, would you come up to the mic a minute, soldier with the blue hat cord and the cross rifles on your collar? Who are you and what's your job?
I'm infantry. I'm Private Dogface. I'm Private 1,000,000. Draft number 2985. Dog tag number 893-247. Otherwise, I'm just the guy who occupies ground. They land me in planes from the air. They shoot me up to the front in trucks and scout cars. But a lot of the time, still, I walk. Yeah. Even with all the wheels and machines of modern war, I walk, I creep, I dig, and I burrow, and I wiggle ahead. I take cover and I creep from cover and I hold the line. I hide all day in the foxholes under the bombing and last out. I march with the Continentals and I march with the Army of the Valley and in France. I went ahead through the week and I'm still marching. I'm blind without planes and you gotta give me planes. I can't fight tanks with my bare hands and you gotta give me tanks. I'm not artillery and you gotta give me guns. But when all's said and done, I'm the guy who holds the ground. I'm not just a foot flogger with a rifle in this new army. I'm a member of a combat team. Trained like a football squad with plenty of the razzle-dazzle stuff, the Notre Dame stuff, and the Army stuff, and the Rose Bowl stuff of modern war. My first job, and my last, is to take the ground and hold the ground. I may do it 40 miles an hour. I may do it 2 miles a day. I'm going to be cold and wet, hungry and thirsty, and tired beyond tiredness. I'm going to see my friends die, hear the wounded cry out like a whispering seal. But I'm going ahead, and I'm going to win. The ground gripper, the infantry, Private Dogface for the U.S. Army.
Sitting here at our radios. Squabble some more? Write letters to the papers?
sugar, curse out the government, spread the lies that divide a people, hold up in a chilly sweat every time there's bad news? There's bad news now, and there's going to be bad news for quite a while. The Army knows that. Our enemies aren't pushovers. They are skillful, savage, and relentless. They've trained for years for this chance to enslave the world, and that's just what they mean to do. They'll use every trick and tool. On the other hand, they aren't supermen. They didn't come down from Mars. They can be licked, and they will be licked, by men. Not by men without machines or by machines without men, but by men fighting for freedom with the right sort of tools in their hands. And place this one in your hat. It wasn't just the snow and the cold and the mud that bogged down the German drive in Russia. It was a fighting army and a fighting people. It wasn't just sedition and Magna Carta that stopped the Luftwaffe cold in the Battle of London. It was a fighting Air Force and a fighting people. We've got the fighting army, and it's going to fight all the way around the curve of Earth. Men are going to die. Very good men are going to die. They're going to die in the jungles for the shape of a Virginia field and the crossroads store back home. They're going to die in the cold for the clear air of Montana and the smell of a New York street and the church where they used to go if they went to church. For some things they learned at school and for some things we've all of us learned. For three words cut in gray rock. Duty, honor, country. And for an idea called freedom. I'm not going to use the big words. I'm not going to talk about sacrifice or in vain. We are going to know such sacrifices as we have not known since Valley Forge. And unless we win this war, even that will be in vain. It's you that I'm talking to. And you, all over America. We've got a fighting army. Let's show them a fighting people. You see, armies differ. In some countries, an army means a steely political machine, dominating the government, trampling on the rights of the people. What's our army? Let's hear from one of its historians.
It has a soul of its own. It is nothing in itself, but is everything as an organ of government. It has no political aims, no political ambitions. Its commander-in-chief is a civilian. It is the people's army, and theirs alone.
In some countries, an army is run by a heel-clicking military cat.
Get into the gutter, you civilian spine! Don't you know the sidewalk is for officers?
Yes, Capitan. Certainly, Capitan. Keep a tail there, Capitan.
No. That isn't our army, and it never has been. We have our training school for regular officers, West Point. Money won't get you into West Point, and neither will a social register. No graduate of West Point has ever tried to upset the political system of this country. No graduate of West Point has ever tried to build up a ruling military caste. They are men who do their hard jobs for less than civilian wages. And when they retire, for a few of them, there's a medal in a box and a flag hung up on the wall of a cramped suburban apartment. And for others, there are the graves. The graves in Arlington. At Poisson, in the cemetery at Manila, in the unmarked ground. The graves marked,
"Here lies an American soldier, known only to God."
But meanwhile, they do their job and they live up to their specifications. Duty, honor, country. That's our ruling military caste. And the others, well, you know them. The lawyer, the doctor, the florist, the man you take the 5-10 with, the hacker, the clerk, the farmer. Everybody who's got somewhere a piece of paper with the seal of the United States on it and the words honorable discharge. That's our army, the people's army, and their sons are in it today. It's an old army and a new one. It goes back to the cross-belted Continentals and the farmers who held their fire at Bunker Hill. It's Dan Morgan's riflemen and Stonewall Jackson's foot cavalry and the Rainbow Division and the men who hold loose arms. It's the dandy silk stocking outfit from the cities and the sergeant with half a dozen hash marks. The shave tail fresh from the point with his class ring shiny on his finger and Private Percy of the kitchen police. It's an army that calls its leaders Mars Robert and Old Jack, Ulysses and Old Iron Pants and the Green Hornet. An army with its tongue in its cheek and its gun in its hand. A disciplined army, you bet, but our own kind of discipline. An army that takes the machines like a duck to water. The fighting army of the American people. Of the people, by the people, and for the people. First, last, and all the time. Are you back of it?
Listen.
This is the army. This is the army. The United Army. Let's go. We got the summit. We got the point. We got the national right to point. War.